Welcome to the O'Reilly Data Show podcast. I'm O'Reilly's Chief Data Scientist and Director of Content Strategy for Data, and your host, Dan Lorica. In today's show, I talk with my good friend, Ion Stoica, founder and CEO of Databricks and professor of computer science at UC Berkeley. Our conversation covers the early history of Apache Spark, as well as that of the UC Berkeley AMP Lab. Enjoy the show.
I just did an analysis of proposals for Strata New York. The number one trending topic is Apache Spark. But not as many people know the story behind Apache Spark. And as one of the creators, so how did you guys end up building Apache Spark?
Thanks, this is great to hear, Ben. So actually, the story started back in 2009, and it started with a different project, Mesos. So this was a class project in a class I taught in 2009, spring. And that was to build a cluster management system to be able to support multiple cluster computing frameworks like Hadoop at that time, MPI and others, to share the same cluster and the data in the cluster. And then after that, pretty soon, we thought about what to build on top of Mesos. And that was Spark. And initially, first we want to demonstrate that it's actually easier to build a new framework out of scratch and on top of Mesos. And of course, we wanted to be also special. So we targeted workloads for which Hadoop at that time was not good enough. So Hadoop was targeting batch computation. So we targeted at that time interactive queries and iterative computation like machine learning. So these use cases came both from the lab at that time in Berkeley. We are working together with a machine learning algorithm. So they are trying to scale up their machine learning algorithms and they are running on Hadoop. And of course, they were quite slow on Hadoop because each iteration, it was a job, and the job exchanged data, the job from six subsequent iterations, they were exchanging the data through HDFS. And then for the interactive queries, at that time, I co-founded a company, Conviva, at that time. And one of the, it was in the area of video management, and one of its product was an analytics tool. And as a part of that product, one feature was ad hoc queries. And at that time, you're using MySQL, we're just beginning now, so MySQL was not good enough.
Right.
And I saw firsthand, the limitation of the existing technologies, especially on the open source side. And finally, we are pretty anchored in and we're seeing the trends and the problems in the industry around us because we are founded at Berkeley by many companies like Facebook, Yahoo, and so forth. They have a good relations. And we are seeing firsthand, and people, after the initial, building batch jobs on top of Hadoop, they are looking for the next level, the next workloads. Once you have something, right. Then you want to have something faster.
So let's go back to 2009. So one of the things that makes Spark popular is it really fits in well in the Hadoop ecosystem. So in 2009, was that a conscious choice on your part to make sure that Spark was a really nice component in the Hadoop ecosystem?
Yes, it was a pretty conscious it was a conscious decision then because we never planned to have a storage layer. At least at that point, and even after that, we didn't. So therefore, we really wanted to for people to solve their problem right then. And most of the people even then, they had at least the user we targeted. They have the data in Hadoop and in HDFS. So we wanted to provide a solution for those users.
Now, the other thing that makes Spark popular is, of course, it's ties together so many different workloads and tasks in the data science pipeline. Was that something, when you designed the stack, did you decide, okay, we're going to have this common execution engine to do real-time machine learning?
Yes.
Was that really that conscious at that point?
That's an excellent question. Yeah. Maybe it was in between. The truth is that at that point, in our consciousness was pretty obvious the fact that you want to have more unification. And it's again, we seen this firsthand, and I can go back again, like what I experienced myself. So this company, again, I mentioned startup Conviva, there are two stacks. One is a real-time stack, and one historical stack for analytics. So a real-time stack was streaming. So it was a homegrown solution. And so for the historical, you have Hadoop. So now the problem is that it's very hard to integrate at multiple levels. So one level is, for instance, just to provide, you have to provide the same metric, like how many users are watching a particular video at a given time. Now, for each of these stacks, you have different algorithms, different code based. So maintaining these metrics consistent, extremely hard. Not even, you know, talking about that you need to have two code bases on, you know, for using different APIs, different environment, and so forth. So I think was quite obvious then. And when you look at the way you do many people even with Hadoop do historical data, they kind of try to follow the real time as fast as possible. So typically there is a latency between 20, 30 minutes or something like that, so try to do. And they try to, you know, recompute the data. When the new data arrives, they try to recompute the metrics. And I think, one of the things what happened is that because Spark was so fast, because Spark, you know, achieved all of this, you know, being able to do interactive queries, to do iterative algorithms, which are, again, we targeted from day one. So it's already a unification there, right? We used in memory, right? We used aggressively memory. And so therefore, you have the ability to run as what was in Hadoop, a job in, what, you know, 10 minutes. Tens of minutes, you could run now in seconds or even less than 1 second. So then we started to think about, well, you know, if we can run so fast a job, then by running a sequence of jobs, you know, every 1 second or so, you can actually implement the streaming functionality on top of the same engine, right? So now you have with this one, you have you support three workloads, right? If one is iterative algorithms, so you have something like machine learning, it's easy to build, you have interactive queries, and you have streaming. And of course, you have batch, you know, out of the box.
You're a professor, you know that a lot of research projects, after the paper is published, gets abandoned. But Berkeley seems to have this track record with Postgres and BSD of taking a project and getting industry to adopt it. So what was the playbook for Spark? Was it a conscious effort on your part to go to meetups, evangelize, or?
So I think, look, I think it was, there are many components. And if you look back, you can always rewrite the history.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, especially when you had, you know,
success,
right? Yeah, yeah. So I think that there are, you know, first of all, we had a fantastic group of students. Matei, the creator of Spark, Ben, and others who built Mesos, and then another great group of students who contributed and built different modules on top of Spark and made what Spark is today, which is really a platform. So that's one. So the students. The other one was a great collaboration with the industry. We are seeing firsthand what are the problems, challenges. So you are pretty anchored in reality. The third thing, we are early, right? We are, in some sense, you know, we started very early to look at big data. We started as early 2006, 2007, starting to look at the big data problems. So we had a little bit of a first mover advantage, at least in the academia space. So all this together, plus the fact that the first releases of these tools, particularly Spark, was like 2,000 lines of code, were very small, so tractable. So I think everything contributed. And of course, after we released, and because it was a void and they solve a problem, people were quite excited, both developers and users, and caught up. Then it's a lot of effort, you know, to build up the community, to have meetups and so forth.
Right. So I was going to go back to the meetups, because one of the things that I noticed early on was your willingness, the creators of Spark, the students, the professors, to host, go to meetups. And actually, I mean, these are things that an academic doesn't really get rewarded for, right? So, what was the thinking behind that?
So the thinking behind that, I think, is that on one hand, you need to align the incentives of everyone, because you need, you know, the students also need to feel that also this activity. You know, on one hand, it's great. You know, someone is using your software, and you meet all these people using your software. It's fantastic. But at the same time, you know, the students, they are there to get a PhD, to write papers, right, and so forth. Right. So it was this belief that building systems. So on the second part, to believe that building systems and having people using them allow you to understand new problems firsthand. And you can solve them, right? You are going to be maybe among the first who understand the problem. You are going to be among the first who solve them. So this also can translate in great research. So it was this fortunate complementarity which keep the 4 years the student engaged. And you know, like Matei is now, it's a faculty at MIT, and you know, many other, you know, so a few other people are also have academic position. So the fact that it's not like only building, but also this helps you in your research, I think that played an important role. And it was an example, right? People saw the early success of Mesos and Spark, you know, they wanted to be part of the movement.
So now, just over the last year, you know, significant developments. One, Spark becomes an Apache project. You guys start this company called Databricks. You held the first Spark Summit. The second Spark Summit is coming up in 10 days. It seems like Spark is really entering the mainstream, right? So what's the thinking behind becoming an Apache project and starting a company?
I see. Excellent question. So it's again, soon after we released, Spark was released in 2010, open source. It's again, we saw a lot of interest, actually. We are very surprised, pleasantly surprised by the interest we've seen. And this is grew continuously, both on the developer side and on the user community side. And the, in order to, you know, the Apache, when we move the project to Apache, one of the reasons to make it much more consumable by the enterprises, right? It's Apache becomes a de facto license for the open source. And we made that pass. We made that step. And now with the company, look, it's at we've seen this interest. Actually, it was in 2012 was the first time we organized this. We had this AmCamp. So you have 150 people, you know, for several tens of companies.
And flying then, from across the country,
right,
some of them.
Right. And yeah. Then it was in 2012, we had the first Strata tutorial.
Right.
And it was great interest. Right. And we've seen there. Yeah. And then the second AmCamp and so forth. The second AmCamp, we have 220 people from, I believe, more than 140 companies. So it was a lot of interest. And then people, you know, still hesitating that to use Spark because, you know, there is not an entity behind it, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, what will happen in the future? What will happen when the students will graduate, right?
Right, it's
a,
right.
Yes, there is a community there, but, you know, the creator of Spark are still, you know, it's great if they play a central role into that community. And so we decided at that point to build, to create a company, and this is Databricks. And really, so far, actually, the focus of Databricks has been to increase the adoption of Spark, to put Spark in the hands of as many people as possible, and also to make sure as much as possible that everyone who uses Spark has a great experience. So there, instead of going and having our own distribution, what we've done, we partnered with other Hadoop distributors or other big data software distributors like DataStax, and we worked with them and helped them to distribute Spark and also to be successful with their customers.
Right. And with the Spark Summit coming up, I think there's a lot of excitement around, the number of people who have signed up. And I'm on the program committee. I looked at all the proposals. There's actually a lot of companies using it, right? So it's no longer just people testing it or playing around with it, right? So that must be gratifying for you guys as well.
Yes, it's very gratifying, and we are very happy. And actually, we are very happy that to see that actually the company has had a very positive impact on the community. Actually, in the past few months since we started the company, because we can have more resources, releases of Spark have accelerated. Like you mentioned early on, we released 1.0, which will guarantee that APIs will be stable. That also attracted even more developers. So it was a positive feedback loop, which accelerate the Spark development on one hand, and because of partnership we had with Cloudera, Mapr, DataStax, we've seen again a much greater interest and adoption from the enterprise customers.
And you guys have really also expanded the user base of Spark by embracing things like Python, right? So Java. It's starting out with Scala. I wasn't a Scala user in the beginning.
It's an excellent question and observation. So one thing which was very nice to see, and particularly in the past year and so forth, it was that quite a few applications, very interesting applications, being built on top of Spark. And the reason that we are very happy about that, because when we started Spark, a lot of attention to make it easy to develop and write new application on top of it. So therefore, we have a very rich API, like over 80 operators. While we started with Scala and Java, then we added Python. So it opens Spark to a lot of more developers. And then the libraries. Right, it's a machine learning libraries, graph libraries, which make it a platform, it easier for the developers to build applications.
And these libraries are growing, but from outside contributors now too, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Actually, the majority of contributors now are from outside, and let's put it this way, for the past year we have more than 200 contributors.
Right.
Databricks has 30 people.
And of course now,
everything.
Of course now, if you probably look back to 2009, you probably couldn't imagine that this was
absolutely not. Yeah. No, it's absolutely not. Initially, there are some. We wanted to have some good, interesting research projects. We wanted to make it as real as possible, but in no way we could have anticipated the adoption and the enthusiasm of people and of the community around what we've built.
By the way, that analysis of the Stratus proposals I did with Spark. So thank you for talking with us today, and looking forward to more developments from the Spark development community.
Thank you, Ben.
For more on Apache Spark, come to Strata plus Hadoop World in San Jose this February. We'll have a three-day Spark training course, a one-day immersion program called Spark Camp, and we're debuting a Spark track at the conference. Thank you for joining us. If you like the show, you can subscribe through SoundCloud or iTunes and never miss an episode.